Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. So much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. And we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Monday to you. Hope you had an amazing weekend, some time maybe watching football, going for a walk out in the beautiful fall weather. Hope you had a great day, great weekend. Well, here's my question for you. When you think of your particular church, would you say your church has a forward-moving vision, thinking about the future, planning for the future, or maybe a backward-looking vision, if you know what I mean, thinking about the past, the good old days, and how things used to be, and wishing that you could recover those good old days? How would you answer that question? I'm curious. Well, today, Lee Kreitzer joins me. He's the author of the book, For a New Generation, A Practical Guide for Revitalizing Your Church. And Andy Stanley wrote this forward. And as you know, if you listen often enough, I love to quote Andy from some of his books. I think he's a phenomenal leader. And was interested, just seeing Andy's name on the book caught my curiosity. And I thought, this is a good conversation to have for all of us, whether you're a church leader, a lay leader, a volunteer, someone who attends, doesn't even engage much. We need to have a vision. We need to have a Christ-like vision for the church, because the church is his bride, right? And we're all a part of it. So before I get Leon, let me tell you, we have got our Faith Radio app. People are live streaming from around the world, and it's so fun for us to hear from you. And if you're live streaming from somewhere, email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Tell me where you're listening from. And if you want your name in on a drawing, include your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing, and love to draw names every few days and put some books together and send them out to you. Just fun for me, right? And if you've not ever checked out our Faith Radio app and you plan to travel in the near future, go to your Google Play or App Store and look up Faith Radio Network. You'll see our logo there. You can live stream our shows, catch podcasts. Absolutely amazing. Also, we're giving away one Bible every week this month, and this particular Bible is the Financial Stewardship Bible, developed in collaboration with Howard Dayton from MoneyWise. And this particular Bible offers over 2,000 verses that talk about God's perspective on stewardship, provision, and trust. And if you're interested, all you have to do is go sign up for free on our website at myfaithradio.com. Okay, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Lee Kreitzer is the founding and senior pastor of Amplify Church. His four decades of leadership experience in both the church and corporate worlds give him a unique perspective on how to apply proven leadership principles in the church. He has a master's degree from Fuller Theological Seminary and an MBA through University of Pittsburgh. Dear Lee, nice to meet you. Welcome to the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Susie. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love to start our conversations, Lee, talking about Scripture. And I'm wondering if, just in your own personal walk of faith, is there a verse you've been thinking about these days that you can share with us, or even a life verse?
A passage really in my mind and heart is Psalm 78. In verse 4, it says, "We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders." And that passage is so close to my heart, because I do think, like, no one would ever hide the truths of the gospel from their children. But we inadvertently have tended to do this by wrapping up that truth inside of an approach to church that really matches our preference, but without thinking about how our approach for church may need to be adapted. Not adapting the truths that have changed our lives, but adapting our approach to church so that we do reach our children.
Wow, that is quite a thought. I actually want you to say more about that. So we wouldn't ever intentionally hide the truth from our children, but by approaching our own church experience as if our needs personally matter more than anything else, in some ways it does keep the truth from them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, very much so. And again, inadvertently. And so we get to the place where you say, this is church. This is how I know church to be. This is how I came to Christ. And even without saying it, we tend to act this way. If it was good enough for me, it's good enough for my kids. And of course, the truth of Christ is universal. It's been unchanged for 2,000 years. But the approach to church has constantly been evolving. And so when we say that we can't evolve or change our approach to church, we're pretty much in many cases saying to our children and our grandchildren, if you're going to find Christ, you're going to have to do it in a different church. Hmm. Because our church is designed primarily to reach me.
You know, and I wonder how many of our ideas that are kind of fossilized that we refuse to bend on are Americanized versions of what church should look like. You know, I remember reading about the persecuted church and what their seminary, what it looks like is they meet in caves. They teach these young pastors who are really willing to lay their lives down for the gospel to memorize whole books of scripture, and then they teach them how to jump out of a window without breaking the least amount of bones. They said that's basically what they're teaching them. But what they're doing and how they're meeting looks vastly different from what we look like, right? And I think so often we idolize certain things because we met God in that context, but we've got to be willing to maybe open our hands a little bit.
Yes, and again, it's not a matter of questioning our beliefs or reevaluating should we change our values as a church. But as churches, I think we do need to be able to say, well, what of our practices, our programs, our ministries, are these things drawing the next generation? Are our children and grandchildren connecting with these things, or are they just in place because we connected to them 20 years ago, 30 years ago? And so I do think we're at a time where instead of just wringing our hands and saying, why aren't our children coming to our churches, we need to be able to really say, okay, there are certain things that will not be on the table because it's the essence of what we are all about as Christians. But we have to put a lot on the table that we're willing to adapt and to change, and that's a big change of mindset.
Wow. There's some things, and like as you're saying, not biblical departure at all. We're not talking about that. But apart from that, there's a lot that's up for grabs as far as conversation. That was interesting in the foreword that Andy wrote in your book. He talked about you sat in his office in the spring of 2003 and told him you were considering returning to a role of senior pastor of a struggling, aging church that you'd actually helped start. And you were actually at that point, I believe, if I remember right, serving in a leadership role somewhere else. Bring us back to where you were serving in a leadership role when this call came, this invitation to return to this church. Tell us, just give us context of that story and what that was like for you.
Yes, I served as a pastor in my 20s and early 30s. But then for quite a few years, almost 15 years, I was in the world of human resources and leadership development. And so my wife and I were living in Atlanta. And I was the regional vice president of one of the leading leadership development and executive coaching firms in the world that was based out of Boston. And we were active members of Andy Stanley's church. And then I got a call from the church that we had helped to found and back in Pittsburgh. And the question was, would you consider returning? The church is on the verge of closing our doors. And so that was a big decision, and I did sit down with Andy, who I think the world of, and we talked through kind of the pros and cons of what that would mean, but ultimately I felt like it was God's call, and so in 2003, my wife and I moved back to Pittsburgh, and I returned back into full-time ministry.
Wow. And what was that like for you, Lee? I mean, truly, that you responded to the invitation, but you didn't step into a thriving situation. You had your work cut out for you.
Yeah, it was difficult. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary a couple weeks ago as a church, which is absolutely amazing. But we never would have reached that far unless we had made some radical changes. And in 2003, our church, our attendance was approximately 150 people, which doesn't sound like a very small church, but we were trying to support a pretty large facility, and we couldn't make our mortgage payments. The facility was kind of falling down around us. But the biggest concern was this: the average age of those attending was well over 50. Now, I was 50 at the time, so it wasn't, I had nothing against being around 50-year-olds. But the problem was the church was over 15 years older than the average age of our community and getting older every year. And so we had to realize, this is not trending well. And I believed that God had planted us in that community to reach the community. But it was very clear by looking around, we weren't reaching the community. We were just reaching older members of the community.
So what were some of the first changes that you made then?
Well, the biggest thing we had to do was change our mindset as a church. We, when Paul writes about being transformed by the renewing of your mind as individuals, I think as a church, we needed to have a renewed mind. We needed to change our mindset from if it was good enough for me, it's good enough for my kids, to what will it take to reach our children? And so that was a huge focus for us in the first few months that I was back as pastor, and we started some small groups around that topic, and I took a number of the leaders from the church to North Point Community Church in Atlanta so they could witness firsthand a church that was truly multi-generational and truly shaking the world for Christ. So the idea was not let's have a church filled with just young people, but clearly when Paul writes about older men and younger men and older women and younger women, he's assuming the church is multi-generational. And somehow we had lost that assumption, and we really had to start to regain that. So within a few months, we still weren't attracting very many young people, but the people of our church started to shift to say, we've got to do something. We've got to do something. Mm. And so that was really the biggest first thing, Susie, to get to that place where we were saying, we can't just sit back and wait for things to come back around. I mean, when I was growing up, I went to church every week. It was an obligation, and every one of my friends went to church someplace, and it was almost like a social obligation. Well, in one generation, that's totally disappeared. I mean, especially I'm in the Northeast U.S., there is there is nothing about nothing compelling in this next generation and the millennial generation where people feel obligated to go to church. So now we can't just assume that people are going to come, and so we can pray and fast and hope that the world changes and people and young people will start coming into church automatically without us making any changes. But that's really an unwise approach.
Well, we have to pause here, but I'm so interested, as I read, Lee, that, changing a mindset of the church, you said it really, as you said, it focused on this message in life groups, but also from the pulpit. And truly, I can see how that would be an impossible thing to accomplish without the buy-in of the people to say, we have to do something about this. I mean, where they own it as well. And that's just amazing to see that that happened. I want to hear what happened next. And if you've got questions, you can give us a call, 877-933-2484. Just questions about where your church is at, what you sense God is saying, where you sense he wants to take you, 877-933-2484. You can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Lee Kreitcher in a moment. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to author Pastor Lee Kreitcher. His book is called For a New Generation, A Practical Guide for Revitalizing Your Church, forward by Andy Stanley. And he was saying, he opened with a verse, the scripture that talks about we're not to hide the truth from our children. And though we don't overtly do that, we may do that inadvertently when we approach churches saying, hey, if it was good enough for us, it's good enough for our kids. We cannot have that mindset. We're in a different day. And I got to give a shout out to listener Nicole, live streaming from Ashland, Wisconsin. And she said she and her husband are young church planters with five little girls, and this program goes hand in hand with a devotional that they just went through by Tom Rainer titled I Will on Christianity Today about walking away from consumerism Christianity. So, Nicole, why don't you know you're getting a copy of Lee's book, For a New Generation. Thanks for what you do. So, Lee, before the break, you were talking about here you're called back. You started a church, then you were in a leadership role of a different organization, and God called you back because the church was struggling. The building was bigger than the church was at that point and kind of struggling. You just said, we've got to come up with a whole new mindset. As you started to realize the median age of your attenders were way beyond the community that you were trying to reach. And so you started to preach messages, have life groups to the point where these people now are like, we can't let this go. We have to do something. Take it from there. Tell us what some of the next steps you took and the impact that you started to see in your church.
Well, one of the things I was blessed with, Susie, was during the years before I went back into ministry, was to watch a lot of great leaders in the corporate world to bring about change in their organization and how they did it. And typically the principles that they used were principles that I could trace back very easily to Proverbs and the writings of people like John Maxwell. But I remember one thing that Jim Collins wrote in a book called Built to Last. He said, we need to ask, what do we stand for and why do we exist? This should never change. And then feel free to change everything else. And I think that's the first thing we had to do, is identify what were the essentials of what we were about as a church. And for us, our vision was to lead as many people as possible into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. And we weren't fulfilling that mission effectively when it came to the next generation. And so we had to say, how can we focus? What are the things that we're doing as a church that we need to focus as much attention as possible on that'll get us the closest to our vision? And the three things that we ended up with for us was our weekend services, small groups, and children and youth ministry. And we said, we've got dozens and dozens of programs and ministries that we're giving time and attention to, many, many good things, but we need to focus as a church on these three things as much as we can, our time, energy, and resources. And that was really the start of our change. Our weekend services were seen by many people, not just young people, but certainly young people, to be either boring or weird or irrelevant. And we just had to say, we just need to make our weekend services as irresistible as possible to people, you know, so that they are drawn to come. And eventually people started to invite people back to church again. And that's the number one way that people come. And very often we're not inviting people to our churches because we're not sure how well they're going to connect with our church. So those were three things that we really focused on. Our children and youth ministry was a really big deal. We had about 50,000 square feet in our facility. Not one square inch was devoted to children and youth space.
Wow.
I mean, we had a number of programs going on. I'm talking about the children's program in the church. We didn't have, and so adults would say, well, maybe kids can use our space, but only when we're not using it.
And what a message that sends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And so we took our chapel and turned it into a kids' theater. And a number of people were saying, well, why would we devote space just to children and youth? We have no children and youth. And we said, exactly. we have to have the best curriculum imaginable and send our volunteers for training. And let's do whatever we have to do to create an environment in which God can transform our children's lives.
And what did you change in the weekend services then, Lee?
For our weekend service, we had a number of things that we worked on, and maybe I'll talk about how we approached that. Because once we identified that the weekend service was a key for us, we started to say, are there things in our weekend services that are distracting people from the essence of the message? And I remember as a young pastor, I talked to a gentleman who led a storefront church, and he had about two dozen people coming, and I realized pretty quickly that it probably wouldn't grow much bigger, because he said he brought his dog with him to church, and his dog would lay in front of the pulpit, and while he was preaching, the dog would bark and howl.
Okay.
And people got used to it because they were there, but a visitor came up to him one time and said, I actually liked the message, but I had a hard time hearing it because the dog was barking. And the pastor proudly said to me, I just said to her, I love my dog. And if it's between you and the dog stays.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was struck by that so much. But the fact is, our churches are filled with barking dogs.
Wow.
Things that we have adopted, we love, we're used to, but they distract people from the essence of what we're all about. And that's what we started to look at as a church. What are some things that are actually working against us, even though we're so used to them?
Did you, I mean, we've got, let's see, it's 26. Sorry, I'm doing math in my head out loud on radio. Sorry, Matt, my producer's rubbing his temples now. Got about 2.5 minutes before our bottom of the hour break. But what did you identify, if you don't mind sharing? What were the barking dogs? Can you think of a couple off the top of your head that you thought, we've gotten so used to this, but it's something that's not necessary?
Yeah, I mean, some of them, we just had to look with fresh eyes. Like, we had a sign out front that was broken and falling down. And so people who were in the neighborhood would drive by and they'd see that, and no one would be attracted to want to come to that church. Our parking lot was muddy, so people who came knew to wear old shoes. But if any visitor came, they would break. Women would break their heels, or guys would end up with, you know, muddy shoes. And so these seem like small things, but collectively, a lot of these things are first impressions of our church. We had our foyer was painted mauve, and back in the middle 80s, and from back in the middle 80s, and, you know, it was that pink, the same color as Pepto-Bismol, which is supposed to keep you from throwing up, but actually it made you throw up. And these things are so easily changeable, but we're used to them, but they get in the way. I'll talk about some more substantial things maybe in a minute.
Yeah. Can I ask, how did you raise the money? Because all of these things cost money. Did you cast the vision and just tackle them one at a time?
Yes. Like, for instance, we couldn't afford a new sign right away, so we just went to a local sign shop and got a it was like a cloth sack that we just threw on top of the sign that looked more modern. And it, believe it or not, this for $100 or so looked way better than the sign. But the thing is, people started to catch a vision. Well, maybe we can get healthy again. Mm. Maybe we can be multi-generational again. And so volunteerism jumped up, and giving did too.
Man, amazing. Lee Kreitcher is my guest today. My question for you on the other side, Lee, is, okay, so you kind of came back to what was sort of a dilapidated church, 150 people in a 50,000 square foot building. How long before you saw growth and fruit? I want to know that for sure. Give us a call if you want to just talk to Leah, just to get some vision advice about where things are at in your church, what God might have for you next. 877-933-2484. But you can see, as Nicole talked about in her email, if we approach church with a consumer mentality, we have all these expectations that things should go our way, but no expectancy that about what God might want to do in our midst. Don't go away. More conversation with Lee Kreitcher in a moment. Bopping around in the studio here. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to pastor, author Lee Kreitcher, author of the book For a New Generation, A Practical Guide for Revitalizing Your Church. Lee tells the story of how he started a church and then a number of years later was working in an organization in a leadership role, got the call from this same church asking him to come back, take the pastoral role. If I remember right, he wasn't quite ready to do that, but God nudged him. He came back. But the church was in dire straits, owned a 50,000 square foot building, down to 150 people. things were kind of dilapidated. And before the break, Lee was talking about just identifying some of the things that sort of were distractions to people, maybe things that kept people away. And it's so truly, it's the stuff that we live with. It's almost like when you paint a room and you get one wall painted and you contrast it with the other walls, you're thinking, how and why did I let this go so long? But you don't even notice what you're living with until you get a vision for something new. Okay, so take us up to speed here. I just wanted to reset for those who maybe just tuned in. You started to just cast a vision and make these upgrades one at a time, just thinking we've got to do more than just reach the people who haven't left yet. There are people who in our community who need Jesus, and we got to create a space for them to come. Take it from there and just talk about when you started to see fruit, and when maybe people started to come and you were encouraged by that.
Yeah, actually, I think we talk about the change of mindset of the importance of thinking, what will it take to reach our children? But we also had to have a change of mindset that we had to start being as equally devoted, if not more devoted, to reaching people than we were to keeping people. And so to a great degree, we were completely devoted as a dying, declining church. We can't afford to lose anybody else. So whatever the people who are in the building want to do, we got to find a way to do it. Instead of saying, there's a lost world out there, people far from God, we have to do whatever we have to do to reach people, not just keep people. And so that was a huge part of what we were doing. And so we put a lot of things on the table that we were willing to change, except for our values, our beliefs, our doctrines. And so here's a couple of things that we changed. And this is, and even the book for a new generation is not meant to be prescriptive, because every church is different. The conclusions that every church member and leader have to come to need to be specific to that church. But here are some conclusions we came to. For instance, We looked at our dress code. Well, our dress code was an unwritten dress code that women dressed up for church. Men wore jackets and ties. And here we're trying to reach the next generation, many of whom were in workplaces that were very informal. And in essence, to tell young adults, you need to go clothes shopping before you can come to our church. For us, that was a distraction. And so we made that change. Now, of course, some people felt, well, now you're not honoring the, you know, the holiness of God, because you're not dressing as formally as we're used to dressing. So these changes were controversial. Here's one that was very controversial. We had a food bank in our church. And the assumption is, if you start something like that in your church, then you need to do it until the Lord comes back, no matter what. Well, we found that the vast majority of people who were coming for food were from a neighboring community. And so we found a church in that community that wanted to host a food bank. We paid and gave money to help transfer the food bank there. We still provide volunteers and regular support. But because that church is closer to the community, the number of people being served is much higher.
Wow.
For us, then, it opened up an entire wing in which we started a youth program. And so, of course, some people said, you don't care about hungry people anymore. But these are some of the choices we make. Are we going to do the very best thing to reach our vision, or are we going to do so many good things that we don't have enough time to do our best things?
And Lee,
does that make sense?
Totally. But I also think there's a time to be, when he shrinks you down before he builds you up. You know, I'm not much of a cook. Well, I'm not really a cook, but I do know that there's something called reduction when you boil something down. I've heard it anyway. But truly, I do think, I mean, you look at the state of how things were when you got there, there needed to be a boiling down to the basics. Then you go look at North Point, Andy Stanley's church. They're doing the basics and then some. But don't you feel like you have to, you got to get healthy in that core center. And once you kind of establish and hit a stride, you keep maintaining it. But you can add other things. But I think when you overreach too soon, it's too much, isn't it?
Yeah, and Tom Rainer, who you mentioned a few moments ago, one book that really inspired us in those early days was called Simple Church. And he really said, boil it down to the essence of what will drive your vision the most. And that's what the churches with the biggest impact have. And believe it or not, our church of 150 had way more programs, ministries, and services than North Point that had at that time about 15,000, much more now, people that they were reaching and changing a whole city for Christ with far, far fewer programs, ministries that they were trying to juggle.
Hmm. And you had said in the book that if someone at one point would have dropped your church bulletin or program, it would have taken them a few minutes to pick up all the pages, and that was sort of an indicator. You're like, okay, time to scale back a little bit. How was that met? Overwhelmingly, did people get a sense of the vision, or did you battle some discouragement because of the opposition, or how did that go for you?
Yeah, that was I did battle discouragement because almost everyone agreed we need to reach young people better. Almost everyone agreed we need to help people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. And everyone was fine with the idea of let's raise our weekend services to a greater level of excellence and maybe even to try to have a bigger focus on children and youth programs. So the things that we're talking about, people resonated with. But the moment we started to stop doing things in order to do those major things better, that's when we started to have opposition because each person had their own barking dog. In other words, each person had their own area of the church that resonated most with them. And they were saying, as long as you change everything but this, then I'm okay. So over the first couple of years, which were by far the hardest, but I believe in sweeping change because that's what I've seen work. And we tried to implement all of our core changes within the first couple of years. And so about a third of the people who were in the church and who even voted for me to come to be the pastor found other churches where they resonated more with the ministry. And it was more to what they felt comfortable with. And these were good people. They love God. But at the end of that 2 years, we had about 400 people attending our church instead of 150. Hmm. And a lot of those new people were people that included people in their 20s and 30s and young families. And we started to see lives changed again. And it was very challenging, but also very rewarding.
And then, so you started to see that, and you got your leaders then maybe buying in as well because they're starting to see the fruit of what you're doing. On one hand, you hold on to the core essentials that God gives you, and yet you get vision, too, for what are some of the next things that we tend to. What does that look like for you, Lee, and with your team as well?
Well, I think one thing that we were very much devoted to was the importance of elevating our standards. And so we really started to look at things like our website, for instance. And if you had looked at our website at that time, you would have said, this was created by a grandmother in her parlor, and it was filled with flowers, and it looked like it was from the 60s or 70s. Well, it wouldn't be the 60s. I don't think we had websites then. But it had those kind of images. And so anybody looking at it would say, well, this must be an aging, dying church. Now, they would have been right, of course, but we were changing. And so we said, we've got to elevate our website. That's the front door to many people to our church. And we put a creative team together for our weekend service. We had pretty much an attitude that said, if our services are led by the Holy Spirit, it's going to be marked by unplanned spontaneity. And so I said, no. No, the work of the Holy Spirit is not indicated with unplanned spontaneity. It's indicated by changed lives, and no lives are being changed around here. So we did put a team to prayerfully consider the upcoming services and how can we, the music and the visuals and videos and handouts and just how can we create an environment in which the message that God is giving us or the series of messages that we're working on really sticks with people and makes a huge impact in their life. And so I took the challenge myself, elevating my messages. I started to put about 50% of my time into the weekend message, which was about 25 to 30 minutes. And so I had to step up as well as a communicator.
So when you said within a couple of years you grew to about 400, how long ago was that?
So that would have been by 2005, we grew to about 400 people. And now our attendance is about 1,600 people. Hmm. So we're not a mega church and not the biggest church in our city, but we're healthy again. Hmm. And every generation is very well represented. And I'm just thrilled about that. In fact, the average age of our church now is almost exactly the average age of the community that we serve. So
wow.
Our average age dropped 15 years. But actually, we have we just had a 50-plus picnic, which I'm a part of. I'm 62 now.
You just go because you're the pastor, not because you're in your 50s, right?
Well, I fit into that category. And we had over 120 people at the picnic. So we have way more 50-year-olds and older than we used to in those days. But now we also have the 20s and 30s and the 40s and people in every stage of life.
Boy, and you sure make a good point about when there's a disconnect between the demographic attending your church and the community in which you reside, that there are more problems than just the obvious that you're not connecting with your community. It's like, was it Tom Rainer, one of those leaders who said, or maybe it was Andy Stanley, but if my church disappeared today, would my community notice? I mean, am I making a difference? Are we making a difference to such a degree that they'd actually miss us if we left? Truly, again, when we approach church as a consumer, all we care about is our personal Sunday experience. We're not even thinking about the people we're driving by to get to our church. Then again, we're thinking like Americanized Christians and not gospel Christians, right?
Yes, I think we need to be willing to say, what do we need to do to connect the gospel with the people coming in the door? I remember, and without having barking dogs, our pet peeves, the things that we prefer, get in the way. And I remember a very well-dressed young guy, probably in his 40s, who came to our church, and he came up afterwards and talked to me, and he said he was Muslim. And he had heard some good things about our church, and he said, I had to come before I brought my family to see what it's like. And he said, I felt so welcome, and everything was done with excellence. The music, the message was relevant, and I understood it. And he said, this seems like a really wonderful place. The children's areas are great. But I do want to ask you something. Is it always so Christ-centric?
Hmm.
And I said, actually, yeah. And I didn't see him come back again. But you know what? I can sleep well at night if what somebody stumbles over is the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm.
If the message of Christ is something somebody gets to and they say, you know what? I don't, at this point, it's not for me. The problem is when we trip them up so often that they never get to the message.
Right.
Because they're tripping over all of the things that are our preferences, but how we feel like doing church.
Mm, boy, taking our last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how you identify the essentials. In fact, Lee writes, unfocused people seldom live up to their potential. Our lack of focus as a church was one reason we were not living up to our potential. He's talked about how they've gotten to where they are now. But I really do believe that this applies for us as well, just as individuals. When we're stretched a mile wide and an inch deep, we don't have the focus maybe that God has for us. We'll talk about that and just advice Lee might have for young church planters that are listening today. Don't go away. More with Lee Kreitcher when we return. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to author, Pastor Lee Kreitcher. Andy Stanley's a friend of his, wrote the foreword of Lee's book titled For a New Generation, A Practical Guide for Revitalizing Your Church. If you just tuned in, just to give you a little backstory, Lee started a church in his 20s, early 30s, pastored it for a number of years. Then he took a different assignment and a leadership role in an organization and then was called back to come pastor this church that was struggling on wobbly knees, 150 people in a large building that was sort of falling apart. And Lee stepped in, made some tough decisions, and cast a fresh vision And here he stands a number of years later. That church has grown to about 1,600 and a dynamic youth program and powerful weekend services. And one of the things you wrote was about focus. And you said, unfocused people seldom live up to their potential. Our lack of focus as a church was one reason we were not living up to our potential. So here you're now about 1,600. That's a nice sized church. And I'm sure you've got plenty of people who come to you and say, we should do this, we should do that. How do you filter these things and how do you stay gracious but stay on task?
Well, I say no to just about everything because I remember
perfect.
As a young pastor saying yes to everything.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden we've got all these spinning plates and often I was the one who was supposed to be keeping them spinning.
Mm.
And it was very frustrating for everyone in the church. And, you know, if there'd be, you know, so we still, after all these years, even though we're in a much healthier place, our primary focus are weekend services, small groups, and children and youth ministry. And, of course, we have things like missions, which have dramatically grown. So it's not like that's the only things that we do, but those are the things that get our time, energy, attention. And pretty much your future will be defined not so much by what you say yes to, but by what you say no to. And we know that personally, too. When you try to stuff too much into your life, everything suffers. Your family, your relationships, you have no margin in your life. And we had no margin in our church, and now we do.
Hmm. And how do you do that now, Lee, at this stage of life? I mean, you're seasoned. You've been at this a while. How do you maintain that so you have margin for your family, for your physical health, even for your time with the Lord, just as a man who follows God apart from your role as pastor?
Yeah, for me, I look at the priorities in my life, and I know that I'm called to be a pastor, but I'm also called to be a husband. My wife and I celebrated our 41st anniversary not so long ago, and a father of two daughters who live not too far from us, and three grandchildren, and this is a huge part of what God has called me to do. And I'm called to lead the church. But one thing that I do as a pastor, and maybe young pastors can, you know, think about this, is to say, am I going to be the person who is at the heart of doing everything? So for me to spend, you know, such a large percentage of my time on the weekend message and on, I think, leading our team, then I have found other people to take the load when it comes to counseling and hospital calls and weddings and funerals and other things that pastors often assume I must do all of these things or people won't, you know, think I'm a good pastor. But trying to do everything, no matter what your calling is, pastor or not, leads to great frustration.
Mm. And don't you feel those formative years when you came back? I mean, I call them formative years because the church was sort of being reborn at that point, having to make tough decisions, having to be content to be misunderstood. Don't you feel like that sort of prepared you to stand now where your yes and no are just a little more sturdy?
Yes, I think so, especially because I realize it is so much easier to say no before something starts than to close down something after you start.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And that's something that I really learned by sitting under Andy Stanley as a leader who really led a focused life and led a focused church, tremendously inspirational. And, you know, when you read his book called Deep and Wide, which any pastor can be reading, whether you're revitalizing a church or starting a church, it really helps to give that sense of what it is to lead a focused church.
Mm. We've got just a few minutes left. Probably have time for two, three more questions, maybe if I'm lucky here. But one of your strategies is to build a mentoring culture. And I was thinking, oftentimes, Lee, pastors and personality leaders don't want to talk succession plans. But you say if we want to be good stewards, we actually have to be proactive in raising up this next generation. Talk about what that looks like and why that's so important.
Yes, I knew from looking at great corporate leaders that succession planning was especially important. So within a couple of years after I got back, I had named a successor who was my responsibility to get ready.
Wow.
And that's many years ago, but the board approved that person. And in probably 5 years, he'll take the role of senior pastor, and I'll move into a different kind of role. I'll always be involved with the church. But if something happened to me 5 years ago or today, he would be in that role immediately and be prepared. That would be my job. Another thing we do for a mentoring culture is we actually pull young leaders into visible leadership roles, especially on the weekend. And so I find older people are fine to have younger people in visible leadership in weekend services. But 20-somethings and 30-somethings, they don't want to come into a church where the person opening in prayer and then reading the scripture and then doing the announcements and then speaking and then leading the singing, if they're all 50, 60, 70 years old, they're not going to be drawn to that. At least in my experience. So we actually implemented what at first was the 50% rule. Now it's the 75% rule. The 75% of everyone who is in visible leadership in a weekend service needs to be the same age or younger than the community that we're serving. And so that forces us to really identify a lot of young people who have potential and raise them up. And it forces a lot of our older people to give up their right, quote unquote, to be up front till the Lord comes back doing something they like to do.
So Lee, how did you identify the person who would be your successor? How'd that go?
I just had a young man who was a graduate from a Bible college and who just had a passion for what we were doing. And I know there's a lot of great search firms that can help to find somebody, but my tendency is to believe that everyone you need is in the house and is there in the church. And so I just looked and started to coach him. We actually started an extension campus where he leads as a lead pastor, but instead of him just coordinating or pastoring the campus while a video of my speaking plays, he actually speaks each weekend. So it's raising him up. And then he speaks probably once every month or so at our main campus where that I'm at too. So slowly but surely, I've just been coaching him along, and he is all in, and the congregation is all in for him. So I think it's like Elijah and Elisha. You look for the person that God leads you to and invest in that person. And if it doesn't work out, find somebody else.
Boy, that's such great wisdom and stewardship. And it's, you know, that's where you have to be humble enough to remember that this is God's kingdom and this is his platform. But I just think it's a rare thing, Lee, that you'd be willing to do that. But I think it's stewardship, and it creates kind of a seamless transition then for the people. It's not as hard on them. And boy, I just applaud you for that. As we get ready to wrap, I know we've got young pastors and old who listen, wondering if you would pray for those and their families who are in those roles, that you just pray God would encourage them today.
Yeah, I'll pray. And if they go to foranewgeneration.com, there's a few tools that might be helpful and inspiring as well.
Right.
But Father, I just thank you for those who you're calling to either plant or to revitalize churches. Give them wisdom. Lord, give them courage. And Lord, let them see that it's worth the fight. The next generation is worth the fight. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Lee, thank you for the time today, and thank you for all you're doing for the kingdom.
Thank you, Susie.
God bless you.
God bless.
Title of the book, again, is For a New Generation, A Practical Guide for Revitalizing Your Church. I've been talking with Lee Kreicher. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Coming up next for hour two, here's a question for you. Do you want God's involvement in a more intimate way in your life? Do you want to bend an ear and hear him more clearly in your life? Well, wait till you hear a conversation coming up in hour two. Don't go away. We've got a great hour ahead. Hour two is up next.